Rediscover your passion and begin building a strong, vibrant, and happier life to get you from where you are to the life you were born to live. From Wall Street to Main Street, we bring it all right here inside of Energy Bar. Well, welcome everybody back to another Energy Bar. I'm Dr. Faye, your host for this wonderful, wonderful show. I think it's wonderful, and many of you think it's wonderful as well, because we get to have conversations, real conversations with real people just like you and me. We talk about the things that are important to you, and we leave you information that you can use today in your everyday waking, walking, talking life. So as you know, the Energy Bar airs every weekday, including Saturdays right now at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on one of the premier online radio networks, YourAmericaOutLoud.com. So we're glad that you've joined us today, and I'm thrilled to introduce to you one of my one of my guests. We've had conversations in the past, and so we're back here today visiting together, and I'm going to share some information with you about him. His name is Daniel Goodenough. Who can forget that name? Daniel Goodenough. My Lord, what a great name. He's worked as a research scientist, a professional musician, and graphic designer. What a combo. He has taught thousands of students in the last 30 years through the Way of the Heart program to discover the authentic path they were meant to live and how to walk that path in the world. Recently, he has been consulting with companies that want to do business in a new way with integrity, purpose, and heart. Daniel Goodenough is the author of The Caravan of Remembering, a roadmap for awakening the experience of your life's mission from Heart's Way Press. He is a co-founder and teacher of At the Way of the Heart and an international program of personal growth and self-development, The Way of the Heart. Welcome, Daniel Goodenough, to the Energy Bar.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
It's always a blessing to talk with people who are movers and shakers, agents of change that are doing phenomenal things around the world. And I know that you are, just based on your bio clip here. And I wanted you to talk to us a little bit about the Way of the Heart and how you got started in that program, a little bit about your journey.
Well, the Way of the Heart came out of the Way of the Heart was a development that came out of my pursuit of the way I could talk to people about stepping into their reason for being here. Their, why are you here? What does that call you to do? And who does that call you to become? And as a child looking around and wondering why people would go off and to do something with their life that they were really unhappy about having to do, and wondering why they would do that. And, you know, as I grew older, I understood why they did that, and also wanting to help people get to their why, what, and who. So that was, in my journey, that was, if I'm going to talk to people about doing their dreams, I need to do some of my own first. And that was the resulting in being a musician, recording artist, and touring and doing those things, and starting a design studio and getting a fine arts degree and those kind of things. At a certain point, though, I was, okay, now it's time to do what I came to do. For that, all of that was kind of about maybe a personal desire to do something, but even though I was good at those things, it wasn't why I was here. So that's when the Way of the Heart was born, as this is the vehicle for how we bring the personal growth things and the life mission work and the other things we do to the general public. So we've been doing the Way of the Heart for, you know, around 3 decades.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned that people were not following their missions, and in order to help them, you needed to know your own. So what was the real defining moment? What was the aha moment that took you to that place of understanding why people are not following their mission?
Well, as far as my life mission, I pretty much always knew I was here to help people do their life mission, even if I wouldn't have put it in those words. Mm-hmm. As a child looking around and seeing that people weren't living their dream, weren't living their passion, hate, in some cases literally hated their jobs. And so really very, very early, I don't know if I actually remember not knowing my life mission. And very, I suppose then also very early recognizing that other people weren't living theirs. So that became my research project growing up, is understanding that I was here to help people do that, but not really knowing how I was going to do that. And, you know, the work I do now wasn't in a job or a career catalog mm-hmm. anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole personal growth movement came much later. So, you know, if I looked in a job catalog, that what I do now wasn't there. So inventing, how exactly am I going to do that, mm-hmm. was the research project that had me go out and pursue music and art and science and, you know, as things I love, and creating, a good livelihood doing those things. But that was more like research. So there wasn't for myself most that kind of an epiphany moment that, oh, this is my life's mission. I kind of always knew that. But the work was to find a way to, how am I going to help other people get to why they're here? Mm-hmm. And that lifetime of research has led me to the realization that it doesn't have to be an epiphany moment. It can be a skill development thing like any other skill in life.
Sure.
Like becoming an accomplished musician or an elite mm-hmm. athlete or practices to do. So the culmination of all that life research on my part of how do you help people get to that moment where they can articulate their why, what, and who. Why am I here? What does that call me to do? Which is the outer life mission. And who does that call me to become? Which is the inner life mission. That led me to develop the programs around helping people remember. And that's why it's called the Caravan of Remembering. Helping people actually remember or make part of them their design. You know, what was packed in your bags when you were sent, so to speak.
Right. When you talk about the Caravan of Remembering, my mind goes to childhood. The moments that we're so adventurous and we are creative and we're thinking about the future, and we get the questions in schools and church and at home, what do you want to be when you grow up? What are your desires? You know, I ask that of my nieces and nephews, and some of them ponder, some of them are very stern and direct and say the same thing over and over again. So you know that that's the direction that they are truly headed into. There's a scripture that says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's older or mature, he will not depart from it. And my understanding of that scripture, find the way the child is bent, yeah, and then move them into that direction, put all of the tools in their space so that they can be totally equipped. And I don't think enough parents, Daniel, actually understand that principle. What about you?
Well, there's let's say another translation that the word that's been translated as train up comes from midwifery and used in a very particular way in that context in the original Hebrew, and it meant create an environment for life. From midwifery, it's for taking the cowl out of the mouth after birth to create an environment for life. So another translation of that from the book of Proverbs would be train up or create an environment for life according to your children's gift or bent, and when they are older, they will not depart from it, which means, you know, that understanding the nature of your child, the train up a child in the way he should go says that the parent is supposed to tell the children what they're supposed to do, or they're supposed to know, and they're supposed to keep them on that training towards the way they should go. And if you have the translation of create an environment for life according to their gift or bent, then it's more the child being a steward more than I'm supposed to know what you're supposed to do and I'm supposed to train you that way. It might be, you know, in that old way of saying it takes a village to say mm-hmm. that as a parent, if you're present to what is their environment for life according to their gift or bend. It's what's their passion, what's their motivation, what grabs them, what, you know, there are all, you know, who are their heroes. And if you, so the larger inquiry for that creating an environment for life isn't just what do you want to be when you grow up, because there's a strong cultural context to that that may have a child respond in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And creating an environment for life could be you're present to what kind of toys are they gravitating towards early on, and having an inquiry about, so what is it about this toy that you like exactly? And when they're watching certain movies and they're very quote unquote into certain characters, the conversation could be, the inquiry as a parent could be, yeah, so what is it that you like about this character? What draws you to this character? Why is this person your hero? Or why is this character your hero? And if you dream about going to certain places, what calls you about that place? You know, where would you like to go in the world? And then when your child answers, why? What is there about that that's drawing you right now? And so the larger inquiry is whether it's a movie or a book or a family story or cartoons or toys or where what they like to do with their buddies and where they like to go in a bookstore and what sports they like to play. All those things are relevant more for why they're important to them than the actual thing itself.
Right.
So then you find them the mentors that are in harmony with their gift or bent.
Okay.
And it's never too early to start.
Yeah, I was going to ask that because, and I also I'm thinking about the inquiry. When you're asking the why, does the child always have an answer?
And it's not required that they have an answer. As a parent, if they have an answer, you can kind of track that by way of creating an environment for life for them. If it's consistent that they that their why shows a real leaning, that yes, this is what has them come alive, mm-hmm. this is what lights them up, then maybe you facilitate that by finding a mentor to help them grow in that way. If that's not something that is your like specialty necessarily.
Sure.
And to just keep asking those questions is as much for them as it is for you. It's helpful if they're consistent in their answers. That helps you understand how they're wired and maybe why they're here or what is their environment for life and what's their gift and bent. Mm-hmm. Just asking the question, though, creates an environment for life in which it's not you're supposed to do this or you're supposed to be
right.
this or our culture says because you're a mm-hmm. boy or girl you should do X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. It keeps, because they're open-ended questions, it keeps the question open and you're inviting them by asking those questions to be in the inquiry as well. So that even when you're not in the room asking them the questions, at some point if you keep asking those questions, they'll be asking themselves that question.
Sure. Sure, because that's the power of the parent's voice. When we talk about life's mission, mm-hmm. why is it important that we even have one or to find one?
Universal thing, you know, that there's a why. Viktor Frankl, who survived the death camps, created a form of therapy called Logos therapy that in his research, while he was in the death camp, he was fascinated by why some people survived and some people didn't. And that became part of his life pursuit, is to understand this thing that he came to call the will to meaning. And the will to meaning shows up in every culture, from First Nation people to Buddhists to Hindus to Hebrew people to Muslims, like in every one of those traditions. Regardless of their tradition, there is this thread that's common to humanity to say we're here for a reason. And you know, and Viktor Frankl and even Freud, you know, Freud as a psychologist is famous for his thoughts on sexuality and whatever one thinks about that these days. He also was famous originally for saying that doing the wrong work was as likely to create a pathology in you as the other thing. you know, that the two main drives that a human being has, one of them is to find your work. And we have the will to meaning, and Frankl would say, in the absence of that will to meaning, or in the absence of finding that meaning, the will to meaning will have thing. So, you know, why I call it life's mission is this, the distinction between mission and purpose. Mission implies being sent, and purpose is whatever you decide it is, which will only have to do with your reason for being here if you say so, because you could sometimes your purpose is to get to the other side of the room, or sometimes your purpose is, I don't know, to finish your work so you can have the weekend off, or to go to the cottage on the weekend, or sometimes your purpose is to finish something so you can go party, or whatever we decide. And I've also noticed about this thing that we call the foundation of our life, our life's purpose. That tends to be kind of trendy because it is something you can decide yourself, you know, that it's kind of like fashion trends. On a given year, there are trends in purpose that it's fashionable to say, my life purpose is this. And then as the culture changes, it's fashionable to say, my life mission is this. And if you stay in the inquiry long enough, you transcend the fashion and you get to, regardless of what it's trendy to say your purpose is, you really were wired in a certain way. And if you stay in the inquiry, you'll get in touch with that. And that becomes your guide for the constant reinvention we're being asked to do in our time.
Yeah.
You know,
when
people move from job to job to job and they have to reinvent themselves, what's your context for that? So that's also why it's important too. When the average high school graduating senior will have 16 different jobs in their life, what is it you're going to use as your context for constantly reinventing how you come to that conversation?
Very interesting. Very interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue this conversation with Daniel Goodenough right after this station break. I'll be back in a moment.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Energy Bar. My guest today is Daniel Goodenough, and he is an author, a speaker, certainly a motivator and an inspirational speaker. He's talking to us about our life's mission and parents on how to train up a child in the way that he or she should go. He's also talking to us about the authentic path of life. And there are some steps I know we need to take in order to move in that direction, because you mentioned something, Daniel, before we went to break, is that people going from job to job, and the average high school senior will have how many jobs? 16 different jobs in their lifetime?
That's a recent projection.
A recent projection. And we can see that, right? We can experience that in the marketplace. Number one, there's so many opportunities to try different things. And so children and adults are wanting to try different things. Maybe they get bored. Maybe it's just something that they needed for the cash at the moment. And then they shift gears. I said this to someone some time ago, that thought of being at one job for 30 years or 40 years and retiring is becoming extinct, or living in the same place, unlike my parents and grandparents and some of my siblings even, that actually parked and stayed in the same place and at the same job. But we have a generation of young people now who are explorers and adventurous, and so they're always looking for new things. But how do we take that, Daniel, and narrow it down so that people can learn to tune in to the authentic self? And what are the steps that we can take in order to discover our authentic self?
Well, again, if you have it as a context and a format, that it's a skill, knowing why you're here, what that calls you to do, which would be how you bring your life mission to the world. That's the what you're going to do thing with your why, and that's why it's the outer life mission. And the inner life mission being the who you would need to be to step into it, and who you'll become by doing it. And the what changes the who. And so by doing the thing you're called to do, that changes who you are, and that's the point of doing it. And then who you are changes what you do, which changes who you are, which changes what you do, and that's the cycle. And when we leave this place, the who you've become is the only thing you'll take with you, right? So you could say that's kind of the point. So how do you get to that? Well, that's the scales, and that's why I call them scales. Like if you were a musician, you'd be doing scales every day. So even though there are those things we discussed earlier that might be scales about your childhood, you know, they're very contemporary things. Like if you were to create your ideal room, what would be in your ideal room? And more important than what's in there is, why is that your ideal? If everything in that room had something to do with your ideal, why is it in there? So that's a scale that would. And if you would say, if you knew you could live for 300 years and be healthy and have all your faculties, what would you do with 300 years? Because your people are used to hearing, well, if you only had a year to live, what would you do? And that's a good one too. How about the bucket list? You know that movie, The Bucket List?
Right, yeah.
You know, so there are these things you want to do before you die, but what if you said, what's my life mission bucket list? Which could be very different, you know, like, what's my life mission bucket list? It would be the bucket list what of the things you would want to have done before you leave this place that were your reason for being here to do. Or, you know, so what do you do for the love of the game? What wakes you up? What's the pull in your life? What's the question at the center of your life? That's a very adult question. What's the center? What's the question at the center of your life? And what's the question your life is meant to be the answer to? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and as a grown up, who are your heroes now?
Yeah.
And again, most importantly, why are they your heroes? So in this ongoing inquiry, when are you know, there's kind of those more general questions like, when are you most confident, when you feel the most alive, what do people come to you for advice about, what fascinates you, what motivates you, what's your deepest engagement, you know, and there, if you had, you know, remember the original TED conference presentations, when there was only one TED stage and you had 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. And in those days, because there was only one, you were pretty much guaranteed, if you got your 18 minutes, it was going to be watched by 100 million people all over the world. Mm-hmm. So that's a question I often ask is like, okay, if you had your 18 minutes and you knew the world was going to be listening, how would you use those 18 minutes?
Extremely powerful. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, and you know, where do you go in your escape dreams? What's the beauty you love? Rumi said, let the beauty you love be what you do. What's the beauty you love? That would be what you do if you allowed yourself to do that. You know, I could go on there, but it's this idea of, how do you prepare for your authentic self? You stay in the inquiry to see, well, who is that? Mm-hmm. What's the who? And having arrived at what's the who, you know, when we're talking about millennials and people just moving in, you know, Generation Z, I guess they're calling themselves, or they're being called, you know, there's a different orientation to entering the world of work these days that has to do with, in the old days, we would go off and get credentials so that we could do a job. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm going to learn these things, I'll get these degrees, I'll get these certifications, and that qualifies me to do the work. And now the orientation is flipped. It's like, here's where I want to go in my life. This is why I'm here. This is what I'm up to. So I'm going to go get a job to learn the skills. And so my work trajectory is about knowing who I am and where I'm being called to go, mm-hmm. and the end point I have in mind, and then making my decisions about my work based on this ladder of skills I'm going to be accumulating, or this menu of skills. So that's a whole different way of orienting yourself So what's your context for working that out for yourself? If you haven't done this inquiry, and what are you going to be basing that on? In this endpoint that you're saying, I'm going to do this job, and then I'm going to do this job, and then I'm going to do this job because I want to learn these skills so I get to this place. What place are you trying to get to? So again, the inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
What's my why? What does that call me to do? And who am I called to become as a result of stepping into the what I'm called to do?
Yeah. You say that in your life mission, why you do it, that you can remember, as long as you can remember, remembering is that you would see people go to work and they go to jobs that they hated. They were unhappy. They were miserable. And that work thing was making people unhappy. And you state that you believe that people deserve to be fulfilled in their work. I totally agree with that. They deserve to be fulfilled. When you talk about the amount of hours and time that we spent doing something, then we need to be mindful of the why. We need to do the inquiry. So I like that thought, that idea, the inquiry for self and for children when you are responsible for those little brains, be responsible to do the inquiry. You believe that there's only, that it's not only possible to work in your passion, but it's the most productive way to live your life. Talk to us about that for a moment.
Well, I would say that, you know, that it's an interesting thing we have with this, our relationship with this thing we call work. Like, first of all, the English word work has the same root as the word allergy. And the word job comes from the Old English, which originally meant something distasteful in the mouth.
Wow.
And then that was a jobber, with somebody who cleaned up the things that were distasteful in the mouth. And so we have, and you know, we have occupations, which is a military term for power over. We have very few actual positive words for this thing. And I think that comes out of the industrial age, where we made the bargain. I'll do this thing that I don't really like doing for 20, 30, 40 years, and then I'll get to retire and do what I love. Well, as you mentioned earlier, we don't have that bargain anymore. Right. You know, there's no such thing as I'm going to do this for 20 years and then I'm going to retire and do what I love. You might get laid off after 19 years and not get that retirement. That's something that's happened in our world. So starting from the very beginning, and starting from the very beginning also means, as parents, in our time, an average college education is at least $100,000, and often $200,000 and $300,000, depending on the school you're going to. And you're in a, as a parent, you're saving up to invest this in your kids, and you haven't really done the inquiry with them, for them, you know, and found them the mentors who would help them do their inquiry, so that when you're going to invest that kind of money, that it's for something, and they don't graduate and get a degree in something because they thought that was a safe thing and they'd make money doing it, and then they go do it and they hate it, or they get a degree in one thing and then never do that. You know, like in Madison, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. where I went, the town was filled with people who had advanced degrees that were washing dishes, you know, like, they got a degree in some obscure something for what, who knows why, but then never did anything with it. So just on a very tangible, practical level, to have this as a thing that would be a given, that it would make sense to be in this inquiry and train children to be skillful at knowing why they're here. Because it is a skill development thing. So then when you get to the place where you're making these practical decisions about, do I want to go to college? You know, maybe I don't. Maybe to accumulate the menu of skills I need, there's an apprenticeship or a traveling or something, you know, but, you know, not to not going to college. I did. I'm just saying that you should know if you're going, why you're going and what it's in service to.
Right. So you mentioned where you were from, that people with so many people with degrees. I have met people with degrees who were homeless. And so it's not in obtaining that document. It is really knowing your purpose. And that's what makes people stay with it. And you said that you believe that each person deserves to be excited and enthused about going to work. and that you believe that work involves entirely too much of our life to be taken up for something we're miserable doing. And I see it on the faces of people who just go, and they're like robots, and they just get up, go, come on. They start the same routine over and over and over. In my opinion, that is not true. That's not living.
Well, I often think of it in terms of fate and destiny. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is your life mission is a kind of destiny. You were meant to do something. It's your birthright as a human, as a human person. It's your birthright. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we haven't been told that. And here's the difference, that you have a destiny, but it won't happen by default. Mm-hmm. You need to show up to it. If you wanted to be a master musician, you show up to your instrument every day and do your scale. If you want to be masterful at stepping into making it real in your life, that your reason for being here or your destiny, it's something that, because it won't happen by default, that you have to show up to. And if you don't show up to that, then you live fate. And fate is just wherever you're taken by the river of life. Like, you know, imagine being a cork on the river. It'll take you where it takes you. And for some people, it seems to work out all right. You know, like, well, I just kind of went with the flow, and, you know, I'm kind of okay with my life. And the problem with that is that at any moment, though, that river could come around the, you know, go around the bend. And as a cork, you get taken to a backwash that maybe you just go around and around and around and around, and you don't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's where people go, you know, they get to the top of the ladder. Now, Stephen Covey would say, you get to the top of the ladder and you realize it was leaning against the wrong wall. And you go, is that all there is?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it can seem to work out for a while for some people to just go with the flow. And why not be in charge? Like, why not be in the boat, in the river of life, with oars, in communication with the one that sent you, stepping into, and not just stepping into your life mission, but doing it masterfully. You know, like, There's a book called The Talent Code where, you know, he talked about the 10,000 hours, but it's not just 10,000 hours, because there are people who have put 40,000 hours into a job, you know, that distasteful thing. And they're worse at it after 40 years than the first year they did it, because there's no love of that job, and mm-hmm. they checked out, and they're actually worse at it. So it's not 10,000 hours. It's 10,000 hours of what's called deep practice. And the only thing that has you show up, and 10,000 hours is 3 hours a day for 10 years, the only thing that's going to have you show up to build that, and by the way, the average high school graduate has put 10,000 hours into video games. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're going to become a video game programmer, good for you. You've built some mastery. If that's not what you're here for, though, that was a kind of a wasted mastery, in the sense that you could have put that 10,000 hours into something that was your reason for being here. So ignition is my point. You know, when he was talking about in the Talent Code, I think Daniel Coyne, I think is his name, when he was talking about the deep practice, that means showing up with ignition to the practice so that you're doing it consciously. Mm-hmm. So what's the ignition? That's your why. So when you get in touch with your why, that's the thing that has you come back over and over to the inquiry of why am I here? Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the point where you could tell anyone anywhere under any circumstance, this is what I'm here, and I can clearly articulate, this is why I'm here, and for the moment I can see that it's calling me to do this on my way to there, and this is who I'm going to need to start stepping into this, and this is who my sense of at this moment, who I might become by doing that. And you can say that to anyone, anywhere, anytime, because you've become masterful at that, because you've put your time in with that inquiry. And then that moves to bringing your ignition or your why to developing the skill and the thing that is your reason for being here. And this is a lifelong thing. Pablo Casals in his 90s got up and did 3 hours of scales every day. So why you do these scales is not just to get started in a career. And by the way, life mission isn't just a job. There's a work life mission and a family life mission and a community life mission and a spiritual life. And life mission is everything in your life. And you could break it down and say, okay, what's my spiritual life mission? And what's my family life mission? Mm-hmm. And what's my community life mission? And yes, there's my work life mission. But it's not like you do this inquiry so you figure that out and then, okay, I'm done. I got it. It's doing these scales like Pablo Casals through your whole life so that you're constantly upgrading your skill at both articulating your why, what, and who, and knowing when it's... Now, if you've got 16 different reinventions on slated for you in our current time, then having an ongoing skill building about understanding your why, what, and who, and how you bring that to the world helps you dance elegantly with our changing time.
I love that. It helps you dance elegantly. And on that note, we got to take a pause. And I want to talk to you, Daniel, when we come back about soul murder. I'll be back in a moment right here on the Energy Bar with Daniel Goodenough. Hi, ladies. Are you still using sanitary napkins that are filled with toxins like dioxin and furan? According to the EPA draft report, dioxin is a serious public health issue and that there are no safe levels of exposure. So why are we still using it? Because we don't know that we have an alternative. Yes, by Inspire, a product line Cherish, sponsored by abettersolutionforwomen.com. abettersolutionforwomen.com. Get your biodegradable sanitary products at abettersolutionforwomen.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back to the Energy Bar. I'm Dr. Faye, hosting the Energy Bar 6 days a week right now, every weekday. And then on Saturdays, a special treat for you right here on America Out Loud, the Energy Bar. I am your 7-Eleven talk show host right here. And Sundays, we're here for Intentional at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're having a great time and a great conversation here today with none other than Daniel Goodenough. Daniel, before we went to break, we talked about this life's work, and we can break it down in spirit, life work, home, family, whatever. But you talked about soul murder. Whenever I hear terms that are kind of, I don't know, they're just new and fresh. And soul murder was a new one for me. And I thought, oh my goodness, I want to talk a little bit about that, because you said that it's soul murder to not answer the yearning of our hearts and the gifts that we've been given.
Yeah, I think that's an apt term for going to work, whether it's, you know, the certain, we still have these things. I think you still have the thing in the military where if you put in 20 years in the military, you can retire it. I'm not saying people would hate the military if you signed up. Let's hope you don't. But let's say, you know, that, to say you're going to put 10, 20, 30 years into working, even if it's a series of jobs that you hate, that would be, I think, the very definition of soul murder. And if there was ever a time where that's not necessary, it's the time we live in now. This is a time that's so wide open in terms of possibility that if you have a dream to do something, if you are wired for a certain, let's say, passion that is just there. It's just who you are. It makes, you know, it's the opposite of soul matter. What brings you alive? What wakes you up? You know, the all lit up and fully alive life. What is that for you? And if you can imagine it, it's not an accident that you can imagine it. If you can imagine it, then, you know, it's kind of a cliche, but if you can imagine it, then it's yours to do. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been able to imagine it. So, yeah. When you don't do that, the whole world loses something. That's kind of part of my thing all the while growing up, that I want to bring to the world the idea or create in the world, you know, my vision for the world is a world in which it's taken as self-evident that when anyone anywhere on the planet doesn't step into their reason for being here, we all lose.
Yeah.
A light goes out in the world.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think we're all part of each other that makes the greater light. And that whenever there is someone out of place, then there's an imbalance. We can't find our balance. The Apostle Paul spoke about this in the scriptures, that we are members one of another. And the foot can't say to the hand, I have no need of thee, that it takes each of us operating in our own gifts in order to make the entire planet whole. The whole creation is groaning and travailing, waiting for us to show up. Things are in chaos because someone is in chaos on the inside. When there's an inner peace, there is an outer manifestation of that peace, folks. So I want you to hear this conversation today and share it with your friends across social media right now, and make sure you share it when it goes to podcasts. Daniel, we talked about this soul murder, and I so agree with that. And there's so much that you are doing right now. And you wrote a book called The Caravan of Remembering. Is that correct? No, that's the name of the website, correct?
Well, there is a website for the book that is called The Caravan of Remembering.
Yeah.
It's called The Caravan of Remembering.
Well, talk to us a little bit more about that, because remembering is a very powerful word. And I've had conversations before on this show about remembering to remember. And I want to hear a little, just give us a synopsis of what you're talking about in the book and what led you to write it.
Well, I've been doing these life mission classes, as we mentioned earlier, in the general public, and now I'm doing them with corporations that were in-person events. That would be, you know, let's say a Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. And I wanted to make the skill building available to anyone, anywhere, without having to be at a class. So that's why I wrote the book. So the process that we go through over the course of a Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, or an all-day Friday, Saturday, Sunday process in person is now embedded in this book called The Caravan of Remembering. And it's written as the story is fiction. You know, I've used elements in my life that, you know, anyone would do, as authors do, but the story is fictional. And it's written that way as an example of somebody, anyone could work the process. So the process is embedded in the story, and it's at the back of the book. And in the back of the book are these scales that I mentioned. And not only are they listed, it listed with them is where in the book it shows up, so that you have an example when you're working the scales of, okay, I could go to that page and see how the character in the book, or the characters plural, are negotiating that inquiry. So you have as an example. So it's meant to be a tool that anyone could use. I mean, literally anyone could read the story, or even if you skipped the story and just went to the back of the book, you could go to the back of the book, look at the scales, the inquiry that would help you articulate your life mission, your why, what, and who. And then if you chose to do it that way, then when you wanted to say, well, let me see how somebody would do that, you could go to that page in the story. So it was really meant to be, I wanted more people to have access to the process that has been my life work for helping people. And that it always works, you know, that I've got to find somebody who didn't, as a result of doing the process, get to the place where they could articulate their why, what, and who, and become more skillful at it. So, and it's also meant to be, you know, like those hopefully classic books that, you use the process now, and you could use it again next year, and the year after that, and 10 years from now, and 20 years from now.
Yeah.
It's timeless. Because the inquiry, you know, life mission as a concept is timeless.
Yeah.
And throughout all of time, we've been called. And just real quickly, you know, the thing that you mentioned about the chaos in the world, I just have this idea that in any given time, the solution to the problems of our time have always been present. In the hearts of the people present on the planet. And I don't think it has to even be 50%. If maybe 10% of the 7 billion people on the planet stepped into the positions they were meant to step into, it would make a huge difference for poverty and pollution and sickness. I mean, the person who has, if the person who has the cure for XYZ disease is instead working on the commodities market because that's where the money is, not only did that person miss out on their calling and the benefit that would have been to them, that disease cure didn't happen, right? So I think it is really important that people do whatever they came to do. And that might be being a hot dog salesman, as you know, as that line goes, because if wherever your place is meant to be, if you could be in that place, there's a ripple effect.
Yeah.
So this book was written to help people get in their place, to mm-hmm. remember or make part of them, mm-hmm. to remember, make part of them, their reason for being here.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, I believe that each of us, once we get in our place, that we begin to change the world around us. And then ultimately the bigger world. But this world that we live in each and every day, our own personal villages, our own personal, our families, we begin to radiate that peace and that joy and all of those positives that come with knowing why we're here. Your thinking begins to change. The way you respond to your spouses and your children, it all changes when you get in your zone, in your lane, in the space that God created you to be in. You'll find yourself living from this heaven on earth place. And then that begins to radiate. If you go in the marketplace, if church or just wherever you go, you are that light of the world now. And so even if 50% of the world never catches it, I believe if each of us individually catch it, then the bigger piece will it just somehow works out. It just somehow, mm-hmm. you would begin to see through different lenses. We begin to respond to life differently. And then we become the magnet that begins to attract others to that light. And I believe that's the message that I've been given to, you know, help people see the greater light in them, help people to know how valuable, important they are, because there's enough news out there telling people what they can't do and how they, you know, all the negatives. So we want to change all that, change that perspective and allow them to see how valuable and how good they really are. That each of us has goodness on the inside of us. Now, our behavior may not always reflect it, but it is there, it's present there. I like what you said, Daniel. You said our world stands on the shoulders of those who follow their visions in the past. Evolution, however you may feel about it, is the byproduct of something calling us to a new way. Oh, man, I read that and I just got chills, because that is such a powerful statement, Daniel.
Well, and, you know, even within a single lifetime, if you're in your place, mm-hmm. you make it easier for other people to be in their place. Mm-hmm. And there might be a thing called the divine appointment that, if you were meant to work with other people who were meant to work with you on a certain transformation in the world, and you were off doing something else, then that other person that you had a divine appointment to do that work with is going to miss it because you missed it. Mm-hmm. So we stand on the shoulders of those of previous generations, and possibly we are meant to create shoulders for other people to stand on in this generation. And it's just so important that we step into our place.
And you said that each time one person anywhere in the world listens to the voice coming from within, the world changes in ways hard to map. That's mm-hmm. awesome.
Yeah. So when somebody does step into it, the world transforms in a way that ripples and is hard to map. And then there's a consequence when people don't. Mm. And, you know, not to get into, you know, blaming someone for not, but just say, you know, it's not just your gift. It's a gift to the world, and it's an important gift, and it's why you're here. And for every person that steps into it, the world grows and transforms in a powerful way. You know, when you said those who know who they are, there mm. is a power in that. And mm-hmm. when we don't, and it won't happen by default, you do have to show up to it. You have to be in the inquiry. To know who you are and to know why you're here, you were given choice for a reason. You have to choose to show up to it. It won't happen by default. So there's a consequence to not doing that. The world loses something. Anytime anyone, anywhere, for whatever reason, and I realize there are people who are born into circumstances, that is really tough. And there's no one saying that, hey, you can do it. Mostly those people in those circumstances are being told to, who are you to think you can do anything? You know, like just shut up and do your thing. Mm-hmm. And bless their hearts. So then it would be on us to reach out and say, you know what? You actually are here for a reason. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything I can do to help you with that, I'm here to serve.
It makes some people nervous, it seems, that when you get out of the mix or you get out of the box.
There is that true thing about, I mean, this is really true. If you have a bucket of crabs and one of the crabs figures out how to get out of the bucket, the other crabs will pull it back.
Yeah. That is such a good analogy, because that is exactly what happens. It happens in families. And I think our listeners need to understand, if you're getting out of the box, you want to be out of the box, there you have to focus on your purpose, your destiny, not on the voices of the naysayers or the people who are trying to discourage you. Who wants Job's friends? Who wants those people around who want your eyes off of the prize rather than on the prize? And Daniel, maybe you can give us some tips or whatever about how to stay focused. Once you get in that place and you feel in the fire, you feel in the passion, you feel in the growth, but then there are those voices. And
so you have the ability and the ability to respond. We could say responsibility. You could choose the ability to respond to being a wise curator of what you're going to fill the tank with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're going to transcend the naysayers, the way to transcend the naysayers is to create the resonance for hope, the resonance for joy, the resonance for choice, the resonance for the importance of taking your place in the world, and for filling the tank with the very stories of those who have transcended. Mm-hmm. You know, the shoulders that we stand on, taking responsibility for filling the tank with the stories of those shoulders we stand on. So you can focus, you get what you focus on. So if you're focusing on woe is me, look at my circumstances, then that will be your identity. Yeah. I'm this person who has these woeful circumstances. Mm-hmm. Or you could say, yes, these are my circumstances. They're not ideal. They might really suck, actually. But the point is, that doesn't have to be your destiny. And, you know, I could say that you could say that that's easy for me to say. And yet, that's been the motto for my life. I've taken responsibility for filling the tank with those stories that inspire, those stories that wake you up, those stories that give you a witness. I have a witness that people transcend really amazing challenges. People, you know, what people can do is so much greater than what people imagine people can do. So give yourself the witness, fill the tank with that. Yeah. Stay in the inquiry, why am I here? And do these exercises. You know, even if you just ask every day, why am I here? What does that call me to do? And who am I called to become? If you just ask those three questions, you know, that would be a start. And you know, I mentioned a number of other ones on the call. You could, you know, listen back, write them down, ask yourself those questions, and then make sure you're a good curator for your mind.
Excellent. Daniel, this is an excellent conversation. Thank you so much for bringing us to this table so that we can have this conversation on the Caravan of Remembering. Where can people get a copy of your book?
Well, you could go to Amazon for a hard copy. You could go to Kindle for the ebook, or you could go to iTunes, or you could go to Kobo, you know, for the e-versions. You could go to the caravanofremembering.com website. You could go to the wayoftheheart.com website and order the book. And if you wanted to work the process with other people, you could go to caravanconversations.community. There's a YouTube channel for there's a Caravan and Remembering YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to work with other people to work through the process of the book, you could go to caravanconversations.community. And if you ask to be made part of a group or start a group of people who want to work the questions, work the inquiry with other people, you could make that request, and the people who are working with the website will hook you up with other people who are interested and want to commit to knowing why they're here, to being the person who knows who they are, as you mentioned. I like that.
That is wonderful. That's wonderful. So you guys have that information. Listen to it again in podcast. Make sure you take notes during these conversations here on the Energy Bar, because they are life changing. Daniel Goodenough, thank you so much for being my guest today here on the Energy Bar.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you so much. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You are awesome. Thank you for tuning in every weekday. And then again on Sundays for Intentional. I am your 7-Eleven talk show host. Remember to ask yourself the questions inquiring minds want to know. Honor the voice of your life mission. It's important. It's important to you. It's important that you don't spend years going around the mountain, but find out what your life's mission is as soon as possible. If you're an adult and you're listening now, you can do this work. If you have children, you can take this to your child, become more conscious of their likes, dislikes, why they gravitate to different things. That's what Daniel shared with us today. Ask them the questions. Do the inquiry and become a curator of your life. Become that curator. Find out what works for you and move in that space. What a great conversation again today, right here on the Energy Bar. But we're out of time. I've got to go, but it's been a blessing. Don't forget to join us for our other shows on America Out Loud. Go visit the network page right now and find the shows that witness and minister to you, that inspired you, bless you. So you can bookmark those, find us in iTunes. We're doing a great work. Share us across social media. And don't forget, stay tuned. I'm Dr. Faye, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Energy Bar.